Hello and welcome to episode 34 of the Sprues and Brews podcast. My name is Dave and I'm joined once again by Jay.
Hello.
And we are joined by tournament mastermind, Matt. Hello, Matt.
How are you doing? It's good to be back on the show.
Yes, you missed last week because you were busy.
Collecting awards.
Collecting awards, yeah. Devouring Skaven, actually, this time last week.
Yeah, this time last week I was probably putting buckets full of skulls in the back of the car, I think.
Yeah.
It was a little bit of a bloodbath.
Yeah. So Matt went on Warhammer TV with his Vorgraph list, slightly tweaked for the Khorne, Blades of Khorne book changes.
Yeah, it's essentially the list I took to the Throne of Skulls. So if you check out the Throne of Skulls post over on spruesandbrews.com, that is essentially the list that I took.
And you were fighting Oatboy Phil on Twitter, at Oatboy Phil, and his Skaven. So it was a mixed Skaven, wasn't it?
Yeah, he had a lot of Plague Monks. They're tasty, aren't they, Dave?
They are. Well, we'll come to that in a moment. But yes, so we were enjoying watching you as we were doing the podcast, trying not to get too distracted.
Well, no, and it was good, though, because at one point we were looking for Kai. Okay, he's 5 points, he's still in it. It could be a close game. And then the next time we looked up, he was like 17 points ahead.
So Phil was super unlucky during the game. Now, with Starstrike, so if you don't know how Starstrike works, for each objective you can control, and by like the third battle round, there's three of them down, it's equal in points to the number of the battle round.
Yeah.
So in the final turn, you can get 15 victory points. It's a really fun scenario, because if you're behind, you can suddenly jump back.
Yeah.
Or if you're in front, you can suddenly...
Yeah. Unfortunately, there was two turns on the run, turns two and three, where Phil just had to charge his Hellpit Abomination into like 10 Blood Reavers, who would have just evaporated immediately, and he would have been farming victory points. It failed its charge twice in the row.
Oh, curse of the Evocators, then.
Yeah. He'd have been good on the top three this week.
He might be in the top three this week.
Yeah.
So, he was super unlucky. Big combat at the top where Vorgrath just goes headlong into everything. He went with, I think it was 40 Plague Monks and a unit of 10 Storm Vermin. He went with the Storm Vermin first, and the logic of get some attacks in, and then the Plague Monks that are still alive can fight as well. And Plague Monks like splash out mortal wounds when they die anyway, so he wasn't too worried about losing a few of them. Hmm. Unfortunately, Vorgrath ate the entire unit, I think.
That's mental. That's absolutely mental.
He did pretty well.
I don't know how to kill that Vorgrath. Is he vulnerable to hit debuffs? Like, for example, could I charge in my 40 strong unit of stabbers with nets and a sneaky distraction?
You can, however, I'm stacking buffs on him to get him his hit higher. But essentially, he was on like 1+ to hit, rerolling by the time I'd put all the buffs on him.
So, even if we get him down to 4+, he's still probably killing 120 stabbers a turn.
Phil nearly killed it as well. I think he got down to 2 wounds, and then peer pressure from the Twitch chat, Wade suggested, oh, why doesn't he eat the Bloodstoker? And I was like, oh, well. Bloodstoker's good, he gives him buffs, but we'll leave it to the chat to decide what happened. And of course, the chat said, you know, chomp away. So I needed a 6 for him to gulp down the character and get 5 wounds back. And lo and behold, on those Warhammer TV dice, the 6 comes up and he got 5 wounds back. And I think by that character dying, it put me on 7 blood tithe points to activate Healing Rain. So he immediately healed D3 wounds, and then every one of my hero phases, he got another D3 wounds back. So I think he recovered like 10 wounds by the end of the game.
Almost fully healed up by the time the end of the game came.
The final showdown, he did manage to kill it with the Screaming Bell. Unfortunately for Phil, I think it was just the Screaming Bell left on the board at that point.
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah.
But it was a really, really good game, really fun opponent, and yeah, we had a great time. Looked after by Wade and Raph and Ben, as usual. So yeah, it was really good. Highly recommend it if you get the chance. And, you know, they're happy to have, you know, anyone on the show. So if you just give the Warhammer community guys or the Warhammer TV guys an email, I'm sure they'll be more than happy to have you on the show.
Excellent.
Just make sure the dragon's not on there first if you want your army to survive.
Awesome. So, let's talk about what's coming up in the podcast, and then we'll go around our introductions as normal, because you do have quite a bit to talk about this week, Matt. So, later on in the podcast, we touched upon it. Our top three this week is moments that the dice have just let you down.
Yeah, betrayals from
Betrayal of the dice. I've got quite a few examples. I'm sure everybody has. We're also going to be talking about a certain anniversary, actually.
Yeah, we've not actually brought any cake, have we, Dave? That's a mistake.
No, we didn't bring any cake. Why did we not bring any cake?
Oh, that was your job. You're the cake guy.
Yeah, so on Tuesday, Tuesday, Spruce and Bruce turned 2 years old.
2 years old. Time flies when you're having fun, eh?
It does. I had a lot of fun. I mean, we both typed up that article that's on the website, which I'll put in the podcast notes.
Yeah.
Looking back at our very first video. Yeah.
Yeah, it's brought back some memories.
Yeah, Bruise and Spruce.
Bruise and Spruce it very nearly was, yeah.
So yeah, we'll put the link to that so you can have a bit of a retrospective look back. And we've also teased a few things in there as well on stuff that we're doing regarding branding and future projects and stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's cool. So yeah, happy birthday to us. So this is the birthday podcast.
It's the birthday show.
Cool. The birthday show. What else have we got on the show? We will also have the community top three. And we'll also have the news, which includes pre-orders, new releases.
Yeah, quite a bit of news we've got this week.
It was a bit of a quiet week last week, wasn't it? So
yeah, it was very quiet, wasn't it?
Looking forward to a lot of news this week.
Not much on the old pre-order front. So, without further ado, we're going to go around and talk about what we've been up to in regards to hobbying. In particular, our Tales of series, which is pressing on. We are in Age of Sigmar month. And also, Matt, I think we will start with you because you've also been taking part in another tournament.
Yeah, April, I've managed to get quite a few tournaments in this year.
Yeah, you have.
So on Sunday, I was down in Shavington for a one-day Purple Sparkly Unicorns event. Now, we've been to a few of these in the past, and they're really, really good events, set up by a couple of local guys, Andy Woods and Craig Chesters, who are fairly active on the tournament circuit as well.
Yeah.
And they've been doing a couple of these events now, and they're really, really great fun. Sundays, which is a one-dayer, 1,500 points with 3 battle line, predetermined scenarios, and I think about 14 of us turned up. So it was a really good event. I brought pretty much my Vorgoroth list, but swapped out the big dragon for Archaon.
If you're going to swap out a massive dragon, you might as well swap him out for the Lord of Chaos, didn't you?
May as well. I do like a big centrepiece model, so yeah. You know, I'm a bit of a sucker for that. I also wanted to try out the new Endless Spells, so I brought all three of them as well.
They're not Endless Spells, Matt.
Judgments of Khorne.
Judgments. You'll have Khorne turning.
Wow, I did get some comments over the weekend for bringing a wizard in a Khorne army. Because Archaon's a spellcaster.
Oh, of course he is, yes. Yeah, he is.
And that caused some dice betrayals. But yeah, it was a really, really fun event. I had some great games. First game was against Sai and his Flesh Eater Courts, which I hadn't played before. I was really, a little bit scared of fighting them, but looking forward to doing it.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of bad stuff about them, as in, like, they're solid.
They are solid. And it was a hard-fought game. Sai, again, another tournament player. Really, really nice guy. Amazing painter. I think he does some commission painting stuff as well.
Cool.
And his army looked gorgeous. Last time we fought each other was at the last Unicorns event. And I believe he tabled me in 8 minutes.
That was the free Bloodthirster list, wasn't it?
It was. The shortest game of Warhammer I've ever played. Yeah, he is very good. This was an equally bloody game. At the end of the game, the only thing left standing on the table was Archaon. Everything else was dead. And he was really unlucky as well. In a similar to the story about Phil, I call it a refused flank. I'd put everything apart from one unit of Blood Reavers on one flank and 10 Blood Reavers sitting on an objective on the other flank. Sacrificial unit, hold something up a turn, at least I'd get that objective.
Yeah.
They managed to stay on that objective for 3 turns because he failed multiple charges against them. Due to that, I was up on points from the stuff on my flank, and by then, the everything was dead on there, apart from Archaon was just killing stuff.
So it could have very easily been a very different game.
If he'd have taken that objective, we would have been drawing into like turns 4 and 5, and then it would have been down to positioning and getting the objectives. Because I had such a lead on points, Archaon could just go around, kind of mopping up what was left on the table, really.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was really fun. Second game was against Khorne. Cool. I think Tom, the guy's name was, and he eventually won the event. He had a really, really nice corn army, meaning my Hex Gorgeous Skulls, the anti-magic one, were fairly not needed against him.
No.
And he had some War Scroll battalions in there. It was a proper corn army. But it was a fun game. He won. Better positioning, better tactics, better general. But it was a fun game, and learned some kind of hints on, you know, playing Corman. The tactics don't involve get a massive monster, throw it forwards,
buff it up, then throw it forwards.
It went through Chaos Knights like a knife through butter. But he had about 30 Chaos Knights in the list, I think.
Cool.
It was very kind of cavalry corn army, which you don't see often apart from Juggernauts.
Did you have Juggernauts in it? Or?
No, Juggernauts, it was all Chaos Knights.
I played around with a list that had a lot of Chaos Knights, because I think they're really cool models as well.
Yeah, so it was a really good list. And then the usual stuff that you see in Cornis, Bloodstokers, Bloodsecretors, Slaughter Priest, to get all the stacking buffs on him.
Yeah.
He essentially did to his big block of Chaos Knights what I did to Archaon, so they had, you know, plus stupid to hit, plus stupid to wound, battering whatever they charged at. So that was really fun, and then the final game was against Jason, who we've played a few games with in Warhammer Crew, haven't we?
Yeah, we have.
And he was also playing Khorne, and that again was a really, really close game that came down to the last turn. Lots of fun again. I think most things on the table were dead by the end of the game, as it should be with Khorne.
Mm-hmm.
Got a vote for best army as well, which was nice.
Excellent.
And yeah, once the dust had settled, another shock podium finish with third place.
Another third place.
Well, I was going to say, because, I mean, looking at the chat, these guys, like you say, some of them are regulars at tournaments. It does seem a bit more, some of the lists are quite brutal, like very well-tuned lists, because these are regular tournament goers. But then the scoring system is more like throwing skulls.
Yeah, I think Craig and Andy had a bit of a chat and wanted to have some like soft votes in there, because I think that does make it more interesting.
Yeah.
Your underdogs, who maybe don't play many games of Warhammer but have a beautiful army, have got more chance of winning.
Yeah.
Which is, I like that. That's why I like the throwing
skulls. It's got something for everyone then, yeah. It seems like more like throwing skulls, but it's probably a good warm-up if you wanted to get more serious about the tournament.
Oh, yeah. I learned loads from that second game. Yeah, I got battered, but sometimes it's good to play against a good character, a good player.
Yeah,
you don't
kind
of learn just playing against the same people, do you?
No.
So yeah, well recommend it. The Purple Sparkly Unicorns have got their next event on the 27th and 28th of July. So they're moving to a bigger venue for this one, the Williston Masonic Hall. It's going to be £30 for 2 days, including lunch on both days.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think it's safe to say is an absolute bargain for 2 days of Warhammer.
It is, yeah. So if you're in the northwest, in particular sort of Cheshire Crew area, then tickets are still available. We will provide a link to the rules pack and how to obtain a ticket in the podcast notes.
Yeah. We'll all be going, a few of the local guys who are on the tournament scene are going. Some people who've not been into tournaments before are going. I think John Bracken of Games Workshop fame might be coming down.
Excellent.
If you are from further afield, there is like a Premier Inn just around the corner as well. So, you know, it's a really good event. £30. Bunch of really nice guys.
And they're experienced at putting on the tournaments now. They put a few on, so you know, they know what they're doing running a tournament.
Yeah, we don't need to be worried about, you know, games.
Yeah, not very well organised.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, you might end up playing us for a slightly softer game. Unless I bring the dragon.
But that's 2,000 points, isn't it?
It is 2,000 points, yeah, and that's their biggest event. They have also announced at the one day they're thinking of doing a 40k event, potentially a two-dayer for that as well.
Oh, excellent. I didn't know that. That's cool. Mm. That's very cool.
More on that. They might have more news on that at the two-dayer in July. But for 40k fans, that is something that they're looking to do in. They also have a monthly club night as well,
which is held at the Shavington Village Hall, isn't it?
Social club, isn't it?
Yeah.
So if you we'll have all the details on the site. Their Twitter, I think, is PurpleSparklyU1.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah,
At PurpleSparklyU1. Give them a shout. They'll sort you out with the tickets. And then, hopefully we'll see you guys there.
Yeah.
As for painting this week, well, I say this week, I wasn't here last week either. But for the first part of the month,
we tried to fill in what you were painting last week.
You did a really good job. So, for the first part of the month, I was getting my corn list done. I mean, I've got a pretty big Khorne army. I just had some bits I needed to finish off, like the new judgments, the new scenery piece. Mm-hmm.
A couple of characters.
A couple of characters, yeah. Just a few bits to finish it off, to get it ready for Warhammer TV and this one-day event. So I was doing that. This week, Monday, I want to say, started basing coating 20 Vorkite Berserkers, 5 Hearthguard Berserkers, 5 Auric Hearthguard. All the base colours are down on them. They need a wash when I get in from the podcast. And then do the highlights tomorrow. Job done. 40 dwarfs in a week. Piece of cake.
Yeah, I don't know how you do it, Matt. I honestly don't.
It's a lot of time sat there painting. It's not like I do it in 5 minutes, but I can put some music on, sit down for 3 or 4 hours and just batch paint them.
Yeah, see, I've tried doing more than 5 models at once and I can't do it. I can't do it.
We did a thing, didn't we, a while back on the podcast about different paint styles and whatnot. And I'm the same. I struggle to paint batch paint, and it's because I don't like seeing models that aren't finished. It bugs me.
I think 5 models for me is I'm quite comfortable. I'll do one colour, go through all 5, and then go to the next one, go through all 5. But when I start pushing it to more than that, I still think that's okay. I think that 5 models at a time is okay.
I mean, Jay, you're very much a one model at a time kind of guy, aren't you?
I am, yeah.
But you are, we'll come round to you in a moment, but you're batch painting right now.
I am batch painting right now, yeah.
But we'll come round to you in a second. So you've got 40 dwarfs practically ready to be washed.
Yeah, so wash them down, do the highlights, and then I'm aiming to... Last time I did a Magma Droth in a day, aiming to maybe get him done Saturday. I'd like to get the new Magmic Invocations painted. It's a bank holiday weekend, so the post might be a little bit delayed. I might not have my toys until Tuesday, but hopefully, fingers crossed, they'll arrive on Saturday and get the Magma Invocations done. They'll be really quick, because I'll paint them in the same style as the Magma Droth, which is essentially spray them grey, Khorne red base, dry brush through oranges and yellows in the areas where the heat would be, and then like an edge highlight on the hottest parts with a pure white.
Yeah.
Because then you get the effect of the really kind of hot heat of them. And it's really quick to do.
Yeah.
And they're all just fire, so I can churn them out. And then I've got the scenery piece to do, which if Jay's still got my Retributor gold somewhere, I might have to steal that spray that up. Because that should be fairly simple. Spray it gold and then paint the other details on it.
So by the end of this Age of Sigmar month, you're going to have 40 dwarfs of different flavours. You're going to have the scenery piece and the invocations.
Yep, and another character on a Magma Droth. I've got a few characters on foot as well. If I've got time, I might get them painted. They might slide into the next
one. I'm pretty sure you just said Caradron on Magma Droth.
Characters on Magma Droth. I must have Caradons on the mind.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, you must have, Matt.
Yeah.
I wonder why that is. It's funny that a week on from the podcast where we were talking about projects and staying true to what we were doing, there's been a lot of chatter today about the second half of the year. I think because we're making such great progress on our armies, the mind is starting to wander a little.
Well, we're very nearly, by mid-year we should be on 2,000 points for all these systems.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, there has been talk of what we do after that. Now, one option was we carry on with those armies and make them huge. Yeah, that could work. We've also chatted about doing some scenery and stuff. Again, probably do that in between.
Yeah.
But we've all been a little bit tempted by future projects, haven't we? I mean, I'll mention mine briefly before we talk about what you guys have been up to. But, I've been tempted to do some Caradrons.
So you can't get enough of dwarfs at the moment. So I'm going to have to pause. There's a spider that's been crawling around this microphone. He's gone around in one big circle 5 times. He's just actually, just started to speak, gone the other way. So he's going to come back round to you in a second.
He's only a new spider.
No, he's decided to come back the way he was going.
Yeah, watch out for his mortal wounds.
Yeah, there you go.
There we go.
Sorry, he was distracting me that he was going. He must be trying to find a way off, and he's not going if he keeps going around in a circle. Sorry, Matt.
So yeah, so Caradrons. I've been tempted by doing a nice piratey themed Caradron army. I'm hoping in the new book the gun haulers become battle line. In my perfect world, I'd love it to be just a Sky Fleet. Now, worst case, I made a list. I think I had about 5 or 6 ships in it with minimal battle line, minimal characters. It might not be the most competitive list, but it'll look awesome. And I'm not going to use any of the plastic stands. Everything's going to be very dynamic composed. Yeah. So cannons firing and then a pin in that gunshot to fix the ship.
Like the Skaven conversion.
Like the Skaven conversions. Like in Warhammer World, there's a giant wrestling with a ship. and again using pins through the giant's arms to hold it in place. That kind of thing, to make it the illusion that they're flying.
You like your big centrepiece model, so I'm really excited to see what you do with an Ironclad as your centrepiece model. I mean, I enjoyed using Caradrons, it's just that I don't know if...
I think they could be quite strong nowadays.
Yeah,
there's lots of monsters on the battlefield.
I never did too badly with them, actually, considering. And they might be a force I might go back to in the future, but I really fancied something different. And I think my modelling skills are a bit limited when it comes to the ships, whereas I don't think you'll have that issue, Matt. I think you'll be able to do a lot with them, other than using the stands.
Yeah, well, you've kindly donated the first vessel for the fleet.
Yes, yeah. I'm not helping you, am I?
You're basically kind of feeding my addiction.
Yeah.
So I might... It's a bank holiday weekend. I might get some paint on a gun hauler, maybe.
Are these going to be ice-themed ones?
Yeah, I'm going to do them in a very similar scheme to the Fire Slayers.
That's cool.
I think that's really cool.
From the same realm, a mercenary band that's working.
Do you think you could maybe on one of the ships have a Fire Slayer hanging off it?
Could do.
That'd be cool, wouldn't it?
So,
cool.
Yes, that's what I've been working on the last 2 weeks, I suppose. So, Dave, what have you been up to?
I was going to go to Jay, actually, next.
Fair enough.
Sorry. Jay, what have you... Now, it's been a while, actually. It used to be a running theme that when we recorded a podcast, you would be hobbying during the podcast. But I'm struggling to remember the last time you did this.
It's been cold, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has.
We moved out of the house into here, and it's a bit cold in here, but it's a bit nicer temperature today. So yeah, I'm back painting. I'm painting some Rot Gut Trogoffs because these guys have just been awesome in every game I've had with them so far.
Yeah, they have.
Six. So I've got two of them nearly finished. I'm just doing the highlighting on the scales at the moment. So hopefully all the highlighting will be done tonight. And then for the rest of the week, I can just pick out the little details like the leather straps. I've got to do these stone maces, but I've got an idea for them. They should be pretty quick. And then that's the unit of Trogoffs done.
They do look really nice. We'll grab a picture and put it on the poster.
Yeah, we will. What I really like about these guys is not only do they look cool, but I mean, they hit hard and they are super resilient.
And, you know, they're quite rapid when they can teleport them across the battlefield.
Yes. When they've been hand and walked up. You have to watch out for that. What did I do last time? The game we had this weekend, I used some Boingwat Bounders. They were the ones I teleported this time, wasn't it?
Yeah, you teleported them behind my Evocator. I think you really wanted to charge my Ballistas, but in the end you charged my Evocators. And
if you've got the opportunity to charge Evocators, charge them.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Well, I think you did 6 or 7 mortal wounds on the charge.
Yeah, they have a similar... In fact, they're pretty similar to Evocators, the same sort of role, because they do. They're Boingwat Bounders. They get a bonus to all their attacks and wounds. To their attacks when they charge, their wounds when they charge. But they also, on a 4+, do mortal wounds to the unit they're charging. So yeah.
And if you can kill the Evocators before they strike, you get out of their mortal wounds as well.
Exactly, yeah. That was my thinking. But yeah, they were fun to use. The Trogs I kept this time with... there's a new addition to the army, a Dank Cold Trog boss. He did pretty well, I thought. Then he can buff the Rot Guts even further. He has a command ability that lets him reroll ones to hit. So the amount of damage the Trogs can put out is quite a lot.
Mm.
Quite reliable damage as well.
Yeah, I thought I'd put quite a lot on that flank, but it just wasn't enough for the Trolls. Couldn't hold them back. But it was a great game.
So I'm hoping to get these guys finished this weekend, the Rot Gut Trogoffs. And then I think I'm going to do my Fungoid Cave Shaman next.
Cool.
Hopefully by the end of the month I'm trying to decide whether to paint the Mangler or the Dankhold Trog Boss.
Do the Trog Boss.
I think I'm going to do the Trog Boss, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and these 5 Fanatics will also be painted as well, which nearly gets me there then. For the last 500 points, all I've got to do is paint 1 Shaman, 10 Boingwat Bounders and the Mangler for the last month.
Nice. I bet you're really glad you did all the Goblins in one go.
I've got to do the shields on some of them still, but I mean that's a night's work watching an episode of Game of Thrones. So, I put them down before they sent me Loopy. Picked up the squigs instead.
Excellent.
So I notice it's not just goblins on your painting desk.
No, there are also some Dwarden. These are the more sensible Dwarden that wear armor. Mind you, saying that the Fire Slayers are pretty resilient without that, aren't they? So this was an army actually started at the end of 8th edition Warhammer Fantasy.
Just before the end times.
Just before the end times. So we picked up the new Dwarf Codex, the new Dwarf Longbeards, Ironbreakers, Irondrake models. Fantastic models, really, really cool. And then they stopped the fantasy. So, and they haven't really been supported that well in Age of Sigmar so far. They've got some rules in the General's Handbook. I think they've got one battalion. But they're a bit limited, really. I think they would struggle in any serious game because they're very slow. They don't have much maneuverability to capture objectives. They have no mortal wound output. They only have one character who can dispel a spell. So they're not like as fleshed out a faction as the Fire Slayers. However, in the Age of Sigmar's doubles event, I'm hoping to take 1,000 points of them along with Matt's Fire Slayers. I think they could be a force to be reckoned with.
I think we could do all right with them.
I think you've got 20 Ironbreakers sitting on objective. The Ironbreakers have a 4+ rerollable save as long as you don't charge or run. They ignore Ren -1. They can put out quite a lot of attacks. You can buff them with the Rune Lord and the Warden King. As long as they can just get where they need to go and stay there, they'll be all right.
Yeah, no, I think we should do all right with them.
The Iron Drakes, man, I looked at the stats of these guys. I didn't realize how good these ones were. They have an Iron Drake gun, which is a 16-inch range gun that fires twice if they don't move. I think it's if they don't move, they can fire it twice, including the torpedo, which does D6 damage to monsters. Ren -2. They're like 3+3+1 damage, Ren -1. You can buff it to Ren -2 with a Rune Lord.
That's pretty good.
Firing twice.
That's really good.
Yeah, I think they're pretty good. They also have pretty cool inbuilt magic resistance. The icon bearers you can take in the squads basically negate spells on 5+, a bit like Archon.
Yeah.
Excellent. So what have you got to paint there for 1,000 points?
So I've already painted the Warden King, the Rune Lord's already painted, the 10 Longbeards are already painted, so I've just got to paint 20 Iron Drakes and 20 Iron Breakers, and they're mostly just metal, so I don't think it's going to take me too long. That leaves me about 40, I think it's either 40 or 60 points spare, so there's nothing I can fit in my list for 40 or 60 points. So I don't know. What I could do is reduce one of the squads a little bit, or maybe fiddle around and get some gyrocopters in as well.
Ooh, that'd be cool.
As allies.
Or, I mean, you'd have an extra command point, but I suppose you haven't got many command abilities, have you?
There's just the one command ability on the Warden King, and it's what makes him a unit +1 to wound, which is quite good with all their weapons.
Okay. So you should get aim for the 50 points and get that.
Yep.
Yeah, that sounds good, because you'll have bodies and Fire Slayers.
I'll have bodies.
You'll have bodies. Excellent. So you've got quite a bit there on the old painting desk.
Yes.
So that does now come round to me. I'd like to think I've had quite a productive 7 days since the last podcast. So since the last podcast, I have based my castigators and the crew for the ballista. So they're now completely done. I have almost finished my evocators, so 5 evocators. They've still got the bases and details to do.
Awesome.
And one final wash on their armour. And then there's a few little bits to tidy up as well. Every time I've like tidied up a colour up, then I'm going to notice that another colour's messed up. And so they have got a little bit more work to do on them yet. But I wanted to make sure these got a bit more attention because they're such an awesome unit. Or at least they should be an awesome unit. But never mind. So they're what I'm doing at the moment. In the meantime, I painted the Everblaze Comet because I used one of those in the last game against Jay on Sunday, and I was really impressed with how it did.
It was I can imagine it doing very well against Hordes.
Yeah.
It was a right pain. Yeah. Right in front of my unit of 40 stabbers.
Yeah.
And I couldn't dispel it for 2 turns.
Yeah. So, and then when you do dispel, I just bring it down and I've got more chance of doing D6 more wounds again.
Yeah.
So I was like, right, that's getting painted. And it was so quick and easy to paint, but it looks awesome. I'm so happy with how it looks. Like, yeah, it looks ace. I've also painted my Griffhound. So he's my Griffhound for my Lord Veriton. My wife called him Growler.
My wife said, "Oh, I like Dave's dog."
Yeah. So he's cool. And he leads me on to, just before I came to this podcast, I've sprayed my Lord Veriton. He's going to be, once my evocators are finished, I intend to get him done. And then to round up the month, I want to get 5 sequators done as well.
Oh, nice.
So that, talking about the Throne of Skulls, I'll be taking 1,000 points of Stormcast. If I can get all that done, so the 5 sequators and Lord Veriton, that just leaves me the Lord Arcanum, which I can't get until I buy the massive Lord Arcanium on the Torion.
Yeah,
like because you can't get the model on foot on his own. He's only with that box, which I feel a little bit like... It's a bit...
It's not an expensive box, though, is it? It's
£70.
£70?
Yeah, I couldn't believe how expensive it was.
Yeah, take it back. It's quite an expensive kit, though.
Yeah, so but that's the only way I can get to one on foot. So my plan is, because our Age of Sigmar month comes back around the month of the Throne of Skulls doubles, is to pick him up ASAP at the beginning of the month.
It's a really nice kit, anyway.
Build and paint the guy on foot, and then that's it then. Then that's the 1,000 points that I'm taking done. And then for the rest of that month, I can aim to finish off my 2,000 points.
Yeah.
So my extra ballista, the big Lord Arcanum on Torrelion, the Knight Vexilor, and that's it.
Awesome.
And the prosecutors, three prosecutors.
And then that's pretty much Stormcast done then, isn't it, in a couple of months?
That should be 2,000 points. I mean, there is other stuff that I own of Stormcast that I want to paint as well, to mix up my lists a little bit, because I think they look really cool rules-wise. They might not fit into my list right now, but I think they will do in the future. That's a good thing about the Stormcast book, is there's so much variety.
Yeah, it's a big book.
It's tough to choose what you're going to take.
Plus, there's the potentially in the future the new Demon Hunter chamber. So you can
potentially whatever's coming next with Stormcast. So that's very cool. So I think the Stormcast, once 2,000 points are done, that'll be the main Stormcast project finished. I can see me coming back and dipping in and painting the occasional unit. Ideally like to do another 10 Liberators, so it opens up different chambers instead of having to rely on Sequaters as battle line. If I can get 3 units of 5 Liberators painted, I've got one already, if I get another 2, then that gives me much more selection when it comes to my
general.
They're
fairly quick to paint in comparison to the newest.
They are. There's less going on. That's what I'm hoping to do for Stormcast and for Throne of Skulls.
It's not just me that's been tempted by other armies, though, is it?
Oh, we missed that on you, actually, didn't we? You'll remember, if you're a regular to the podcast, I really struggled to decide which Age of Sigmar army I was going to do for 2019 as part of this Tales of. And the one that ran me closest was Skaven. So I've decided that it is, in fact, Skaven that I want to be doing for the second half of the year, I think. So whilst you're starting your Caradrons, I'm going to do a Skaven list. Now, I'm still a little bit torn if I go full-on Plague Monks, Pestilence, or, and this is more likely, go for Mixed.
I would go for Mixed. It gives you much more variety. I mean, I'm enjoying doing the mixed gloom spikes.
Well, I really like Storm Fiends.
Yeah.
If you go Clan Pestilence, although there's so many buffs and stuff and
I think the cheese at the minute is with Pestilence, isn't it? But like Jay says, a mixed army gives you more variety to paint. You're not going to get a burnt out painting.
Yeah.
Presumably 120 Plague Monks, whatever you'd have.
It's fun because you can, you know, when I'm playing the Gloom Spikes, I've got all the action going on with the Trogoffs and all the regeneration. You've got the moon effects there and stuff and buffing the Trogs. But then you've also got Squigstoness about with the Fanatics, the randomness of that. You've got the buffing of the Stabbers, the magic game with the Shamans.
Yeah.
With Skaven, you can have all sorts of fun. You've got the monsters, the magic as well, artillery.
The biggest thing that, like my hobby challenge, as it were, is whatever Skaven list I go for, it's going to be goodbye to the elite units of 5.
You're going Horde.
It's going to be Hordes, yeah.
Cool.
So, big units of rats. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to taking that on. So you're going Caradrons, by the sounds of it. I'm going Skaven. Jay, I believe you've also been partaking in some purchasing of items.
I have been stockpiling some. I've been looking for some bargains on eBay because I didn't look very closely at this when it was first released, and it was only last week I was looking. It might have been after the podcast actually. I was just looking at on the Sprues and Brews website, and I saw the Wrath and Rapture with all the new Slaanesh stuff. And there's the endless spells and the new Demon Prince, the new character. The new Fiend things, although they're out, you can buy them.
The Fiends are not available separately yet, but they are in the Wrath and Rapture box.
And I thought, I quite like the look of these, actually. And I think I think Slaanesh might be a very strong army. I think you might be able to buff them and make them quite competitive. So when we're going to these tournaments, I might be able to build a very strong list.
I think they have a lot of stacking minuses to hit as well.
Which I like the minuses
to hit. And they, The glass cannons, they're very fragile out of all the demons.
They are
very, very deadly. They are quick. Seekers can charge a turn one wherever you deploy. They will be in your deployment zone. Demonettes just rip things to shreds. You've got your magic. Yeah. Presumably you can have your endless spells and scenery pieces doing effects as well. Yeah, I think they're one to watch.
They remind me a bit of the Harlequin sort of playstyle.
Yes.
So I think I might get on with these guys. So I thought, yeah, I'll do these as my second half of Tailor Gamers. Now, I was looking at the other kits. So there's the Demonettes are already out and the Seekers with the Demonettes riding on them. And I'm not completely sold on them. They don't really, you know, talk to me that well. I don't get on with them that well. So I looked at the older third edition.
Juan Diaz, I think.
Yes, the metal ones. And those ones are brilliant and very expensive. Unless you can find some bargains on eBay, which I have been finding. So I'm slowly building up cheap units of metal demonettes. So I think this army, hopefully it won't be a massive army. I know you've got a lot of demonettes in there, but I'm hoping I can turn it into a more of a sort of like a display piece type army, with them being metal models. And
yeah, I imagine that you could easily make it 2,000 points because, you know, a couple of hundred points for a Keeper of Secrets.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah. I think there's going to be a few conversions because you don't get any of the command models in the metal.
You want your banners for your demons coming back on Battleshock rolls or one.
Yeah, so I may have to pick up. But I mean, I'm thinking about getting that Wrath and Rapture box set anyway, for the Fiends and the. There's a Mask or Herald in there, isn't there?
You get the Enchantress
or whatever it is. Yeah. And so then I can take the plastic standards and hornblowers and whatnot, and sort of chop up a few metal models to stick them on.
Excellent.
That's the plan anyway.
Brilliant.
So, yeah. So I'll keep an eye on eBay for me. If you see any cheap metal demonettes, let me know.
Brilliant. Well, that wraps up quite a large introduction to this this week's podcast. We're going to take a pause here, catch our breath, and come back with the news in just a moment. Moving on to this week's news. Now, there is a bit more this week compared to last week's Puny offering.
We've got quite a lot of stuff this week. A lot of kind of specialist games and fun stuff like that coming out.
Cool.
So we'll start with the pre-orders. We've got a load of Middle-earth stuff coming.
Yep.
First of all, I think we mentioned it last week on the show, but Battle Companies is on pre-order on Saturday.
Yep.
That is £30. That's all about little war bands of characters, not really named characters.
No.
These are your own heroes that you've created. They gain experience and level up, and you get extra guys to add to your warband.
We spoke about this last week, because we think, because obviously all three of us have been talking about getting into Lord of the Rings, and whereas we've kind of been tempted by by Age of Sigmar, Skirmish, and 40k Kill Team, this actually might be a good way for us to get into Lord of the Rings.
Yes, yeah, I think you start with a handful of models. You'd spend, what, 20, 30 quid tops,
yeah,
plus the book. It's not a massive outlay, and you can build it up gradually over the kind of campaign system.
Yeah.
This is essentially a second edition of Battle Companies. They've taken all the stuff that's been in White Dwarf magazine, they've added loads of new stuff, they've revised the rules in line with the new edition of the game. It looks really, really good. I'm looking forward to picking this up.
Yep.
I think most of the factions in the game have got warbands that you can do as well. That's
cool.
Yeah, I think we'd have some fun with that. Alongside this, Eowyn and Merry are getting released. We saw this ages ago.
Yeah, we did.
£25. It's got Eowyn and Merry on foot and on their mount in her Dernhelm persona, where she's fighting at the Battle of Palinor Fields.
Yep.
You can also build her without a helmet on, so you can just use her using the Eowyn profile.
Yeah.
So again, the new plastic kit's been really, really good for Lord of the Rings, with lots of options and
they have, yes,
stuff you can do. I think you can build her without Merry on.
You can, because you can do exactly the same with Gandalf and Pippin.
Yeah.
I think Gandalf has a slightly different arm.
Yeah, which is really good. So yeah, you can use her if you just want to use her as stock Eowyn. I don't imagine most people would. They'd probably use her as Dernhelm. But it's good to have the option.
Yeah, definitely.
We're also getting a raft of re-releases as well. Now, there's been some chatter on the Great British Hobbit League Facebook page that some of these are made to order, but a lot of old miniatures that have been out of production for years and years and years are coming back up. We think some of them are going to be standard range, some of them are made to order. There's the Breaking of the Fellowship, which I believe had Boromir with arrows in his chest.
It's Amon Hen.
What was the Breaking of the Fellowship? Was it that box?
It was. Well, that, yeah, it was.
Yeah, there's the Breaking of the Fellowship.
It
yeah.
Wasn't it?
So it must be the aftermath of Amon Hen then. Which is a really nice set. Don't know how much these cost. To be fair, the Mate Warders are pretty reasonable compared to what you'd pay for eBay prices for them.
Yeah, as I'm finding out.
If they are Mate Warder, they are only available a week, and then they tend to disappear forever.
Yeah.
So if you want them, I'd snap them up. We've got some Adeptus Titanicus stuff come in. So we've got The Doom of Molech, which is a new campaign book telling the tale of Horus's assault of a night world. And as such, we've got loads of rules for knights. Revised rules for knight banners. We've got knight stratagems. We've got new maniples. All sorts of fun stuff. And a whole new massive campaign system in that book as well.
This is up for pre-order this week.
All this stuff's up for pre-order this week, yeah. Battle Company's a pre-order on Saturday.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Out this week's Fire Slayers.
Of course it is. Fire Slayers and the Chaos characters. Yep. Sorry, ignore me. Yeah.
So, yeah, so Doom of Molech, £22. I really enjoyed the last Titanicus expansion. I'll probably pick this up as well. Always good for variety for your maniples as well. There's a few new Legios in there as well.
All right. Are the Ignatum in there yet?
Ignatum aren't in there yet. I imagine they won't show their face until Terror, unfortunately. Yeah. That's not all we've got for Titanicus, though. We have got the Civitas Imperialis Spires.
Oh, yeah.
Now, these are the new buildings with lots of spires, and they look really, really cool. These are £20 for the set. I think that comes with two frames. They can be built by themselves or combined with the old. I say the old, it's only like 6 months old. Titanicus scenery kits. They're also releasing a Sector, which is £90 and comes with 18 sprues worth of scenery.
That's cool.
Yeah, loads and loads of stuff in there. You'd easily cover a table with that.
Mm-hmm.
Which is cool. And also, back is the Grand Master Edition of the game as well.
Ah, right,
cool. So if you, perchance, wanted to get into Adeptus Titanicus, and you didn't have any models, and you didn't have the rules, and you didn't have any scenery, you can pick up this box
don't
and
know
get
many people like that.
A load of scenery, all the rules and the dice and the cards, 2 Warlord Titans and 6 Knights. It's pretty good, that.
Well, it's very good value, isn't it?
I wonder who wants to start Adeptus Titanicus.
Yeah.
In our group who hasn't started it.
Yeah.
So that is back.
I might sell my kidney. If I can sell my kidney by Saturday, I might pre-order one.
Retail's £175. I think I've seen it as cheap as £120 with various web stores undercutting each other on this because it is a popular item.
Cool.
We've got more stuff, though, Dave. For pre-order, we've got 2 new warbands for Warhammer Underworlds.
Oh, yeah.
The first of which, Thundrix Profiteers, Caradon Overlords.
Have you read the preview for these guys?
They're ace, don't they?
They look brilliant. I love their inspiration mechanic. Have you seen what that is?
I haven't yet, no.
So they inspire. Basically, it's all on your leader. So when you do... God, we haven't played Warhammer Underworlds for ages. When you complete an objective and you get a glory point, you can then inspire one of your crew.
I saw this. Yeah, the Writer's Pun community was like, you want to try and get as many objectives as you can in quick succession.
Yeah, it's called promotion, which I think is pretty cool.
Oh, I like that.
So I think you can only inspire as if you captain your leader's alive because he dishes out.
The promotions. I like that. That's cool.
Yeah.
They look really nice as well. Now, you know, I've been tempted by the Caradrons. I'll probably pick these up for £17.50. All the Underworlds gangs are really good. Jay mentioned a few weeks ago, I think it was last week, about painting up all the Underworlds factions.
Yeah.
I'm very tempted to do that myself.
Yeah.
So I'll definitely be picking up these guys. Also out is Ilthari's Guardians, the Sylvaneth band. These have got a really interesting mechanic as well. They inspire when you heal them. And they've got lots of abilities to heal.
Cool.
Very Sylvaneth-y. And I love these models. I mean, the Tree Revenants are one of the nicest kits from the Sylvaneth range. Sort of half health. Well, they're not half health. They're actually tree spirits, but they imitate the elves of old.
Yeah.
So they have the standards, the war horns, the swords, the weapons. They go to war in units like the old elves did. And these guys seem to have a few more options for that. So there's the caster. There's an archer.
Have you seen the rules for the archer? If the archer kills someone, they can immediately make another shot.
Yeah, they said they're going to be good against Zarbag's Git. Yeah, killing all the weak gobos. This is interesting because I think we might see something like this in the new Sylvaneth book when we see
Sylvaneth. They do look quite different than the existing kits, don't they?
Yeah. Do you know what you also see a lot on the model? The little flying bug things.
You do indeed, yeah.
Yeah.
The spites, yeah. Well, they might not be spikes, it might be something else, yeah.
Yeah, so they look, both of them look really, really cool. As I said, they're £17.50. There's also dice for each faction at £6 and sleeves at £5. I like having the sleeves, they look nice, don't
yeah.
they? So that's all the pre-orders, but that's not all the news we've got, because it is, like we say, a bumper segment. So, Cubicle 7 for Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay. The starter set is now shipping. Now,
right.
The game's been out a while now. I think there was some production delays with the starter set. That is now shipping from the Cubicle 7 store, and it's going to be in hobby stores in June, I think they said.
Cool.
But if you order it from Cubicle 7, you might be able to get it earlier than that. This has kind of introductory rules, it has a scenario in there, it has some pre-made character sheets, and I think it's only about 20-odd quid. So it's a really good way of kind of getting into the role-playing game. They also announced today their first campaign book for 4th edition, and that is a new version of the Enemy in the Shadows, Enemy Within campaign.
Right.
So this is about the party basically starts off as a bunch of nobodies in the gutters, rising their way to mighty heroes in an epic, I think it was like a 4-part adventure, mm-hmm. which they're going to do in various volumes. The main storyline is a Xentian cult is uprising with the aims of taking over the world, or, you know, something suitably devious, and it's down to our mighty heroes to face the terrors of the old world and try and stop the plight of chaos. So
awesome.
We need to do this. We need to get some characters rolling and play through this campaign.
We do.
I played the original one years and years ago, and it is so good.
Cool.
So that is on the way soon. Quarter 3, that is out.
Right.
Again, assuming, you know, everything goes to plan, which it should be. Over on Warhammer Community, the annual survey is up.
Yeah.
Have you guys done the survey?
I started doing it, thinking, oh, I'll do this quickly before tea. It's a big survey.
It is a big
survey.
It's
massive. So I parked it. I'm going to do it again, because you need to do it, because the raffle, isn't there?
There is. So one person will win an entire Sisters Army. Yep, mm-hmm. The brand new plastic Sisters that aren't out yet. And then 10 people will win a box of Sisters. Interestingly, the terms and conditions quote the price of the Sisters box at £35.
Okay.
So that's how much a box of Sisters is going to cost. I don't think that's too bad.
No, not nowadays. No, I don't think nowadays.
But it's an indication of price they will be.
And if you want any more temptation to enter this community survey, aside from the fact that they do react to what happens in the survey, we will see this fed back into the system. Well, you know, maybe not everything, but they do really take all the feedback on board.
Oh, yeah.
However, if you want even more inspiration, check out the latest Sisters Bulletin for Mark 1 Rhinos.
Mark 1, I love a Mark 1 Rhino.
Some of the details on those like images are just like, I didn't want to collect Sisters, but that bulletin alone, I was like, that's awesome.
Interestingly, all the pieces they've teased look like they'd fit on a stock Mark 1 Rhino kit.
I thought that, yeah.
I think there'll be different like fascias that you'll be able to put on them.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't surprise me if we see maybe a Heresy release for the Mark 1 Rhino, but then the Sisters is the same sprue with an additional one of extra plates that you can put on.
Oh man, these look so good.
Yeah.
So good.
It's, so again, we don't know when they're out, but the fact that there's not a massive window for this survey, I did have a nosy through the T's and C's because I'm a bit sad like that, just to see if there's any clues to wean out. I mean, we've got the price of the box, but no word on when you'd get these Sisters.
No.
Which is a shame, but
no.
Yeah,
just a big IOU for now. Sister Battle Army.
I imagine the winners will probably get them before the general release, so they can go, oh yeah, look at my awesome Sisters.
And then you'd have them painted before the army.
Oh, out. Yeah. So that'd be cool.
That'd get some YouTube hits.
Digital games-wise, Auroch Digital, who produced the Chainsaw Warrior game, are coming out with a new version of Dark Future, which was an old-school Games Workshop game. If you think Mad Max, it had kind of matchbox-sized cars with guns shooting each other, smashing things. I guess a kind of precursor to Gorkamorka,
yeah.
And Speed Freaks is probably the closest modern kind of version of it. They are coming out with Dark Future, Blood Red States. Tomorrow at 5 p.m. their beta starts. If you head over to their website, you can get hold of beta keys. Auroch Digital very kindly sent us some access for it, so we're going to do some content and some videos on that and let you know what we think.
Excellent. That should be fun.
Isn't set in the Warhammer universe?
It's not. It was made by Games Workshop, but it was its own invented, basically an alternate reality post-apocalyptic thing in like an alternate 80s it was set.
Okay.
So, yeah, very tongue-in-cheek, Mad Max-style apocalyptic car game, which is cool. And then the last little bit of news that was breaking news before I started the show. Warhammer Fest seminar details have been announced. There are seminars every hour for the entirety of the day, including new release seminars, one for 40K, one for Sigmar, one for Horus Heresy.
Oh, interesting.
There are three or four different stages with different things every hour. They have said get there super early to get hold of your tickets.
And the tickets are available an hour before the seminar. So the first seminar starts at 11, so that means...
Tickets are available until an hour before the seminar.
Oh, is it until an hour before?
I'd recommend getting there super, super early and getting which ones you want.
Yeah.
Because they are going to go.
There's loads of cool... I mean, you've just... The big ones are the previews. I mean, they're massive. I mean, I definitely want to try and get into those. But there were some other ones that I thought were quite interesting. A lot of the Black Library ones was a painting one.
There are a lot of the Black Library writers there as well. Yeah. Interestingly as well, if you drill down into the details as well, there's a painting Warcry seminar.
Ah.
Now, traditionally, big box games come out alongside Warhammer Fest.
So that...
I think Warcry will be out, if not that weekend, on pre-order that weekend.
Cool.
We saw the same with Blackstone Fortress at an open day. Where
we saw the same for Silver Tower.
Silver Tower, yeah. Yeah. So,
and
I think,
didn't we see Age of Sigmar 2 at Coventry? Yeah.
I think that was a few weeks before release, but yeah, essentially. It's going to be out that week or the week after, pretty much.
Mm.
So yeah, that's exciting. And that is all the news, Dave.
That is all the news. Quite a bit there. I mean, we've got our Warhammer Fest ticket, so if you see us there, say hello.
Yeah, we'll be hanging out and doing what we do.
Doing what we do. Yeah.
We'll have our t-shirts on, so you best spot us.
Well, yes. Hopefully we will. I need a new one.
All right.
But we've got time to sort that out.
Yeah, we can sort that.
So yeah. Cool. Right. That's quite a bumper news segment. The podcast doesn't end there, so we'll take a pause, and we shall come right back in a moment. Okay, so we decided because we've started to have a feature every week, haven't we?
We have,
It's kind of slowly become a thing, like the top three.
It's almost like an organised podcast now.
Almost like an organised podcast. So our feature this week, it had to be, because this is our birthday podcast, we thought we'd reflect on the rise of Sprues and Brews, now that we are 2 years old.
Yeah, it's come a long way, hasn't it?
Well, it started with you guys just... questioning everybody appeared in the Warhammer Community TV chat.
So yeah, we'll rewind a little bit. Now, myself and Dave used to be involved on a video gaming kind of website and YouTube channel.
Co-founded BlastProcess.com quite a few years ago, back when video games was my thing and Warhammer was kind of like something else that I did.
My speciality was doing some silly YouTube videos with Mike.
Yeah.
We did some very weird stuff, app reviews...
Well, worth checking them out, actually, because they are very active on YouTube. Check them out. Although we don't read for them now.
We don't.
They're still kicking out some killer content.
They are, yeah.
So
check them out.
But yeah, that's where we kind of started. And then towards the end of 2016, I think you started throwing ideas out, Matt, about creating a Warhammer website.
Yeah, and I think we started maybe with a YouTube channel and to see what we could do there. And then I think that evolved into... We need to have a front end for the channel and have like a blog or something. We've thrown around a few ideas on what we could do.
Yeah.
And I think you came up with the name Brews and Sprues.
Brews and Sprues.
And I was like, oh, why don't we tweet that to Sprues and Brews? Which I don't know why. I think it just rolled off the tongue better.
Yeah.
And then, I think you knocked together a little holding page. And before you knew it, we had our own little corner of the internet.
We did. I mean, I put a nice little snippet of information, a little bit of back... not top secret information, but in our first year that we were online in 2017, we had 17,000 hits, which we thought was really cool.
Oh, we were like, oh wow, that's like thousands.
That's cool for just two guys just
chatting about Warhammer news.
Yeah, just two nerds.
And it's probably worth saying, back when we started, it was a little bit more general as well. There would be a bit more kind of like board game content and just general hobby,
yeah,
didn't we?
Yeah, that's true. And we used to do sort of news videos, but I mean, the amount of new releases and stuff now, and obviously we have the podcast and things. But yeah, that it was a great way to start. But it very quickly became apparent that this could, we could do more with this.
Yeah, and you know what? We were quite lucky, really. I'd been subscribed to Warhammer TV since day one. I think it was Matt. I think it was me whose name then.
Yeah.
And around about the same time, I thought, oh, let's just get some product placement in there, and renamed me Twitch account to Spruce and Brews.
Yeah.
And because we were quite active on there, and Rob Symes, and then Kerry, and then Wade, the guys, you know, with lots of really nice interaction with us, and people had, you know, started hearing us over there, even if they weren't aware of the kind of website. We went from I think we had like 20 followers on Twitter, including Ray Dranfield. I think he was an early subscriber of ours.
Well, he's super,
I think he
fan.
Was a,
super
I think fan, he was the second person to follow us on Twitter after Jay.
He's the only one of our super fans so far that said to us, "Can I have a selfie?" I mean,
yeah.
Thanks, Ray. That's awesome.
And I think it's because one of the first videos we did was the servo hauler, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Yeah, yeah. So that was cool. I mean, was it this time last year that we completely redid the front end of the website?
It was around about then, yeah.
Because the original layout served a purpose.
Yeah.
But I wanted to put a lot more time and effort into creating something easier to manage, especially at the rate we were starting to get content out.
Well, yeah, we'd gone from, you know, a couple of views a day to like thousands of views a day,
yeah.
And it needed a bit of a refresh and restructuring and just getting everything all nice and shiny. And you're very good at that back office background of the website, making it all look awesome and work well.
Yep, thanks.
we've been really lucky with it, and you know, we've got some really kind of nice followers on Twitter predominantly, but on Facebook as well. That's growing.
It is, yes.
You know, the YouTube's probably what we're going to try and push this year.
Yeah, well, if we skip forward a little bit to where obviously the podcast launched officially it launched the first year, but we it was a slow burner. I think we were very inconsistent.
Yeah, I mean, we'd originally done the Sprues and Brews news videos, which was essentially what the podcast is now, but they were, I think we did one a month, rounding up all the news that month, and Warhammer news happens so fast now.
Yeah.
By the time the video was out, it was all news.
Yeah.
So we then changed it to, okay, well, we can get a podcast up quicker, but again, they were when there was an open day or when there was a big FAQ event. And then it was, last year that we started to do the...
Technically, we've had three seasons of the podcast.
Yeah.
Although episode 34, that's all the podcast combined. And it's this season, as you could say, season three, where aside from when one of us has been suffering from Nurgle's rot or real
awards.
Life has got in the way or winning awards, Matt, we've been doing weekly podcasts.
Yeah, we have, and you know, I've really enjoyed. It's just something that a bit sad, but something I look forward to doing the podcast and chatting to you guys about Warhammer.
I do. I think it's really cool, and I mean, what's even cooler? I mean, as much as we enjoy the three of us around a microphone talking about this hobby, what really makes it awesome is the feedback we get from people who are listening and saying, "Oh, I really like your podcast," and I mean, there's so many people on Twitter now saying like, "Oh, I listen to Sprues and Brews," and that's brilliant. I mean, that's a big thank you to you guys.
When I was at the Throne of Skulls and people wandering up and saying, "Oh, yeah, I love the podcast," I was like, "Yeah, that's really cool."
It gets you motivated.
It is, and you know, we don't do this to make money. We don't make much in the way of, you know, we make a little bit through the Element affiliate link, which kind of pays for the website to run.
Yeah.
Bar that, we just do it for our own enjoyment. You know, we've had people mention Patreons and stuff. I don't think we'd ever do that because, you know, it's not a money making device. It's just a hobby.
Yeah.
We would often hang out and chat Warhammer. So why not do it? You know, record it and let you guys listen to our musings on the hobby as well.
And we should mention, when the podcast really came about, you joined the team then, Jay, really.
Yeah.
You've been an unofficial member for a while. Now, we went to the UK Games Expo, and for some reason, I think you couldn't get the day off work, could you, Dave?
No.
So he drafted in cameraman Jay, who I think in early videos he was just a voice heard in the background who was often running the camera for us. And me and you, Jay, went to the UK Games Expo, didn't we?
In Birmingham, yeah.
In Birmingham, yeah. And in fact, the night before that is where we kind of concocted one, what's become a bit of a meme slash trademark slash catchphrase, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Where back in the back in the Blast Process days, you and Mike used to always ask people whether they were a SNES fan or a Mega Drive fan.
Yeah.
And we thought, it's cool to have a funny little random question at the end of an interview. And we came up with a few ideas. I think one of the first ones was, what was your favourite Chaos Guard? And we're like, I don't know. A few variables. And literally on like the 11th hour before we were due to go to the show, we just kind of settled on, what's your favourite sprue? What's your favourite brew? I don't even know.
Makes sense.
Yeah, and then that had kind of been introduced to the Twitch chat on Warhammer Community, and those guys love that as well, and it's become a bit of a regular thing on there as well.
Yeah, I mean, they ask people, don't they?
They do, yeah. And yeah, that we kind of tested the waters at the UK Games Expo. Some people utterly bewildered by the question, but most people got it and found it quite funny, so yeah, we rolled with it.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely.
We need to do a top three.
We should do a top three.
Top three, yeah. Top three sprues and top three brews.
You know what? That's not a bad one for next week.
No, we might have to do that. Could have been a good one for this week. Would have been the birthday. Never mind.
Never mind.
So, yes, that kind of brings us to where we are right now. I mean, we alluded to the fact that in the first year we got 17,000 hits for the entirety of the year. We now get that on a weekly basis, if not a lot more.
Yeah.
So the site's constantly growing thanks to you guys, you know, reading our content. We're obviously doing a lot of our Tales of stuff. We've got Matt. I mean, you Matt have invested quite a lot in battle reports.
Yeah,
setup.
I want to just make sure that it looked professional. So we've got some new lighting. Gay Matt, you have mentioned a couple of times on the podcast, have very kindly provided some scenery and some game mats for us.
Yeah.
You know, obviously with all the camera equipment and stuff now as well, so it's time is the only other thing we can do. If we can magic together an extra day in the week.
Yeah, that would be awesome,
you know,
wouldn't it?
We just do this as a hobby, you know, we're not doing this full time.
Yeah, we all work full time. So it, you know, which is another reason why I don't think we'd ever do like a Patreon or anything, because it wouldn't be fair on the guys that would be paying us, basically.
Yeah.
Because we'd only be doing like a day's worth of work or something.
You know, you can pay us by keep watching and comment and share your top threes, and that is the only payment we want from you guys.
That's what keeps you coming back to doing the podcasts and the videos and the battle reports, to see, you know, that people are enjoying it. If we think no one's enjoying it, then you don't really want to do it.
And if you know anything that you want to change, any feedback, we're very open for. We've tweaked things in the past based on what people have said.
In particular, the battle reports. Yeah. You know, we had a lot of feedback from battle reports. We had a lot of feedback on unboxings.
Yeah.
So we took that on board and we got some positive feedback, like, you know, we can see you guys are changing. And that's, you know, we want to put on a good show.
Yeah, we do this for fun. We want you guys to have fun as well. Otherwise, it's no point doing it, is there?
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, moving forward, we're going to be doing a lot more battle reports. We are looking at, it's a bit under wraps at the moment, but we are looking at a little bit of a rebrand. We may have somebody, can we say we've hired him?
We have, haven't we?
To help us with this next stage of Sprues and Brews.
Yeah, some new logos, a bit of a refresh again.
Yeah, yeah, and I've been toying with really pushing my web design skills to, because I just want our content to be easily accessible through spruesandbrews.com.
Yeah.
So there's plenty of stuff going on in the background in regards to that.
Yeah, so a bit of a preachy segment, I know, but yeah, just wanted to say a big thanks to everyone who's supported us over the last 2 years. Again, a big thanks to all the Warhammer community, Warhammer TV guys as well. I think due to you guys, we've seen, you know, lots of increase in followers and stuff, and yeah, that means a lot to us having us on, you know, Warhammer TV and all that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, was it last year we went to Warhammer no, it wasn't Warhammer Fest. No, it was Warhammer Fest, and one of the designers, like, as soon as he caught a glimpse of it, he was like, it's the Sprues and Brews guys.
Yeah,
that's just awesome.
It's slightly general, surreal, isn't it?
As a regular person, just be like, that's a bit sad, but fuck it, because it's like, yes, A Games Workshop designer's just like, oh, get you the Spruce and Bruce guys.
Well, the fact that, you know, Ben Johnson had heard of us when we went to the Open Day. Like, oh, that's nice, you know.
It's nice
to think
that. Unlocks.
Yeah.
Cool. So yeah, thanks again, guys, for your support, and thank you for listening. And, yeah, as Matt said, any feedback, ears are open on Twitter at Spruce and Brews, facebook.com/Spruce and Brews. We put a lot of our images from our projects on Instagram as well. We don't really push that quite as much, but
no. At Spruce and Brews again on
Spruce
there.
And Brews, I think it is. Yeah.
YouTube/Spruce Brews. I think we couldn't get the and on that one.
Damn. We need to hire a Skaven assassin to
we do.
Sort out whoever nicked that channel name and get that off them.
It could be like another three like mates doing we'll have just, a podcast on the other side of the world.
Maybe.
Yeah. Cool. So yeah, here's to another few years doing this.
Yeah, we'll bring birthday cake next time.
We'll bring birthday cake next time. We'll remember that. Mental note for April.
Put it in the calendar.
Next year. Excellent. Right. We're gonna take a pause. We're going to gather our thoughts. I'm going to come back with this week's top three, so keep listening. Top three time, folks. This week we were looking for moments where the dice have let us down.
Yep.
I think that's the best way of describing
it. Dice betrayals.
The dice betrayal.
Dice disappointments. Get some alliteration
dice,
in
dice
there.
Dice disappointments. So we will come round to your community picks in the last segment of the podcast, but we're going to run through ours first. Matt, we're going to start with you. What is your third choice?
So my third choice has recently gone up on YouTube/Spruce Brews, and this is in my game against Craig Chesters and his Daughters of Cain. So I was using Vorgrath, which is a very no-nonsense list. Step one, charge big dragon forward. Step two, kill things. If step one doesn't go to plan, then I'm fairly knackered when there's like 60-odd Daughters of Cain bearing down on me.
Yeah.
All he needed to do was make a 9-inch charge, I think it was, and then decimate whatever he charged into. He failed it. I command pointed it. He failed it again. And then he got charged and ripped to shreds by Daughters of Cain.
It was a brutal video, and quite a few people pointed out on YouTube, like, I didn't realise how, like, mean Daughters of Cain can be.
Yeah.
You found out.
If you take the equivalent points of Daughters of Cain to Vorgrath, you kill anything.
I hear a lot of, in the Sparkly Unicorns chat, they're always talking about Daughters of Cain. I did have one battle against your Daughters of Cain with the Duardi, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah, I remember that.
I don't think I've ever fought your Daughters
of Cain. I think that was your first game with the Daughters of Cain. It wasn't Marathi or anything like that. It was before the Codex, in fact, the army got.
Well, maybe we need to do a Daughters of Cain battle report and I'll get the daughters out.
Yeah. Daughters versus Fire Slayers.
That'd be good.
Daughters versus Fire Slayers. Oh, is you playing the Daughters?
Yeah, one of us can play the Daughters, can't we?
Matt can't play both.
Matt can play both. Matt versus Matt.
But yes, that's my third choice.
One of you have to lose then.
I will do.
They'll get first and second place.
So yeah, Vorgrath failing at life. Since then, I think he's made most charges. He's had a little bit of help making charges, and that's what prompted me to put in the Bloodstoker. The bravest man in the mortal realms, whipping that dragon. He was eaten last time he came out, but that's what you get for whipping a dragon, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. My top three is actually kind of changing on the fly, because you guys reminded me of one, and then I remembered another one. So this is going to be a bit of a mix. There might be quite a few honourable mentions right at the end, if I can still remember them. But my third choice is, when I used to play Stormcast originally, I always used to take a Knight Venerator, which was your fly one.
Yeah.
Now, he hits on a 2+ with his Realm Hunter's bow. And he has a handy ability called the Star Fated Arrow, which takes his normal 3 shots down to just the 1 singular shot. But against monsters and heroes, it can do D6 damage. Ooh. So this one shot is pretty good. The only downside is whenever I've taken him and whenever I've declared that I'm going to fire the Star Fated Arrow, I roll a 1.
Anything but a 1, it'll hit.
Anything but a 1, it'll hit. It hits on a 2+. I just double-checked as you were talking, Matt, to make sure. And it does. It hits on a 2+. But when you choose to fire the Star-Fated Arrow, your 3 hit shots go down to 1. But your damage increases, obviously.
But I don't think I've ever fired and it's ever hit. Never. Always rolled a one. Always rolled a one.
It's worse in Age of Sigmar because you don't get the reroll, do you, from your command point? Do you know what I mean? In 40k, you can reroll that, can't you?
Yeah.
Not that in Age of Sigmar.
And actually, while I think on it, I am going to come up with... This was originally going to be my second choice. But another honourable mention is harking back to, and I think I may have mentioned this on the podcast in the past, harking back to the days of Warhammer Fantasy. So going back in time a little bit here. But I remember when I played Dwarfs, and I played your flammable Wood Elves, and I'd kitted out my Dwarf Lord to basically be a monster against your tree.
The Flaming Axe.
The Flaming Axe. So this Dwarf Lord, during this particular turn, it wasn't looking too great for the Dwarfs. He broke away from his unit, because you could do that in Fantasy. He charged through some ruins. He charged your Tree Lord. And then I think he failed one dice roll. It came down to one dice roll, and he could have killed your Tree Lord quite epically. And I think he missed out by a couple of points of damage on a dice roll. And then your Tree Lord just turned around and just stood on him and just killed him. Yeah, with absolute no problem at all.
That was the old Metal Tree Lord as well.
It was, so it would have been even heavier.
That's going to hurt, isn't it?
Yeah, it will hurt.
So that was one time the dice most certainly let me down. Definitely. Jay, what's your third choice?
The dice tend to let me down in most games, actually, at some point or other. So my third choice is it's like a mixture of choices. So one of my favourite 40k factions, the Adeptus Custodes, you know, solid, toughness 5, 3 wounds, 2 plus armour save, 4 plus invulnerable save in the detachment. They're not going anywhere. How many times do I fail invulnerable saves with those things?
Yeah.
You must...
All the time.
We joke that you must forget to switch them on.
Turn right. Even the 3 plus storm shields failed to... Yeah, that's it. It's mental. The other time I find the dice always let me down, Alariel with her spear.
Yes.
She gets one shooting attack, which can do D6 damage. It's got quite a good range. And, you know, I always count on that, getting some work done in a battle.
I think I've seen you hit with it once in all the years we've been playing.
I think it's like a 2 plus to hit, 3 plus to wound, or 3 plus to hit, 2 plus to wound, and... I'll roll low on everything.
We get so excited if it hits and then it fails to wound.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. So that's my number 3 choice. I mean, that list can go on. I'm just generally unlucky with dice rolls. I mean, what were we playing the other day with me... was it me Mangler? No, Rockgut Trogoffs charging Reaver Chaos. 3 inches away. This is a... No, rolled
double
a,
one.
Rolled a double
I think
one.
Your Mangler did roll low. On a movement, I think it was. I think you rolled a 5 on 3 dice.
Yeah.
Which is pretty unlucky.
So I just tend to find that all those rolls that should be easy to roll, I tend to not roll.
Fluff.
Yeah.
There you go. Round to your second choice, Matt.
So my second choice was from the Purple Sparkly Unicorn event this weekend.
Oh.
And we were playing, I can't remember the scenario's name, but the one where only heroes with artifacts can claim the objectives.
Yeah.
I had a Slaughter Priest with one wound left. There was a couple of enemy Blood Reavers in combat with him. I thought, oh, this is a bit dangerous, because if those Blood Reavers get a lucky wound off, they'll take him off the board, I've lost those victory points. So I go, yeah, that's right. I'll do Blood Boil. It's fine. 4 plus, pow, they're dead. I've got the objective. Everyone's happy. He rolls a 1, causing a mortal wound to himself.
Thus killing himself
and losing the objective.
Oh dear, poor Slaughter Priest.
This is after he's cast the Judgment to try and kill them and didn't manage to hurt them at all.
Ugh.
So, those, in hindsight, if they'd just not tried to kill the Blood Reavers, they'd have probably fluffed their attacks anyway and would have been still standing.
Yeah.
But yeah, he... He obviously angered Khorne, and he took his soul.
Oh dear. Oh dear. Right, okay. My second choice, thanks to Jay and Matt on this one, is not just a particular dice roll. It is... I got given a set of Death Watch dice when I was collecting Death Watch, when they first came out.
Dice in double quotes.
They were an engagement present, weren't they?
Yes, I think they were. And these were the Death Watch dice where you had the chapter symbols on the number ones. Never made sense why they were on ones and not the sixes. But anyway, I was really excited about using these dice. And the lid was a bit damaged on the box. Maybe that was a sign that, these dice aren't going to be... They were rubbish. They were absolutely rubbish. I must have had so many poor rolls with those
dice. They didn't used to roll. They used to hit the table and slide.
But they'd slide
to the one and slide.
Yeah, that was it.
So I used to constantly just see chapter logos.
Yeah.
And
Space Marines.
And that period in time, you refused to use any of the dice by those Death Watch dice.
We used to say, let us roll the dice for you, Dave. We'll roll the dice. No.
So I never had much luck with my Death Watch
Good
dice.
Good for leadership tests, though.
Yes, they were, yeah. those dice, unfortunately, easy to read, not so easy to roll. I've been obviously playing, I've mentioned the part, I've been toying with a future Death Watch 40k Primaris army, and I keep thinking to myself, I'm going to have to crack them out again to see if my luck has changed. I don't think it will have done, but yeah, I've got them still. One day, I might reuse them again. Your second choice.
What you should do is you should give them to Matt as a present. They were given to you. Pass the curse on.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I won't be able to play Nurgle ever again, would I?
No. Your second choice, Jay.
My second choice, and I was trying to think what was the most devastating moment in recent gaming history where the dice have let me down, and it was in my battle report against. No, it wasn't a battle report. It was just a battle against Matt's Death Guard and my Eldar Farseer.
Oh yes!
I mean, it's bad enough when a dice roll doesn't go your way, but when a dice roll doesn't go your way and it turns out you lose your Farseer and three Warlocks.
So I don't think it was pure Death Guard. I had a Nurgle Demon Detachment in there, which gave me access to the possession stratagem. So when somebody fails, when someone perils, it basically does more damage.
Oh yeah.
So unfortunately, oh god, I'll let you tell the story, Jay.
Yeah, well, I can't remember what the psychic power now. It was either Doom or Guide, because they were the two powers I generally took on my Farseer. So he failed that, perils, took his mortal wounds. I think he actually survived, because he's got a special save against mortal wounds. He was okay. Unfortunately, his Seer Council, I mean, when you're playing Ulfa, you know this, Dave. Ulfa, Seer Councils are their thing. So you group your Warlocks up into little squads of Seer Councils. Bad idea when they start miscasting and perils in. And they only have, is it one wound each walk or two wounds?
On foot, they only have.
One or two wounds? I think it's one wound. I think it's one wound. Well, it's like a chain reaction. There was Eldar brains everywhere.
Oh, dear.
It was like a chain reaction of perils, and just they kept dying, all of them, in one turn. All because I failed one dice roll when I was casting a
spell. I know this is going to live in your mind, because when I first declared I was collecting Ulfway, I think one of the first bits of piece of information you gave me was, Dave, just forget about Warlocks.
Spread them out if you have to take them. Yeah.
Awesome.
I've not played Eldar since.
No, no, you have, actually.
I don't mess about with psychic powers.
Oh, dear.
Right, we're already round to our top choices. So, Matt, what's yours?
Okay, so when it comes to games of Warhammer, I'm very no-nonsense. There's two rules I like to live by. First one, hashtag charge everything. You know, even Duncan Rhodes taking that to heart.
Yeah.
Second advice, overcharge everything.
Yeah.
If you have a plasma weapon, overcharge it.
Yeah.
Majority, so I'm, you know, you guys take the mick, because I, 9 times out of 10, will roll, you know, disgustingly resilient saves.
Yeah.
Unless I'm overcharging something, in which case it'll always be a one. Whole units have died because I go overcharging things. And I don't know what it is, it seems to be every time. It's become a bit of a running joke, and I'll just overcharge even when I don't need to now.
And it's brutal now, isn't it? Because if on overcharging plasma, is it a mortal wound?
It's just slain,
yeah.
Yeah. I think there's only like
vehicles that take mortal wounds.
Just take mortal wounds, yeah. But characters, layers.
Yeah. So, yeah, I very often blow myself up by overcharging weapons. But, you know, you're not playing Warhammer if you don't overcharge your weapons.
No.
Every time one of your guys dies from plasma overheating, like overcharging, it's quite a B movie. Jay's definitely seen it. There's a film with Tom Jane in it. And Ron Perlman, and it's called Mutant Chronicles.
Oh, yes.
And there's part of the film where basically a plasma weapon overheats. and that's what I imagine every time one of your guys does that. You're just lucky it doesn't kill anybody nearby.
That is good luck. I should really roll like Hellblasters or something, shouldn't I, for Space Marines?
Yeah, you should.
Just put Gollum in next to him, you'd be alright.
I still roll ones with the rerolls.
Probably, yeah.
Awesome. My top one is quite a recent one. And I mean, I'm now collecting Stormcasters, my Tales of Gamers. And the Evocators are probably one of the scariest units in the Stormcast book.
Are they?
Probably the scariest. Well, apparently, I cannot charge with them.
You can't charge
I just can't
them.
Charge
it's
with them.
It's getting to the point now in games where they're getting charged.
They're getting charged. I've even introduced to my list the Knight Vexilla for re-rolls.
You're still failing.
And I'm still failing charges.
You need to green stuff some roller skates onto the bottom of them.
Yeah.
I think every single game we've played with your Stormcast, I don't think you've ever made a charge with the Evocators.
No. I bring them in 9 inches away, and I know 9 inches is a bit of a charge, but when they fail, they don't just fail by an inch. They normally fail by, like, I've rolled double ones, or a two and a one, or they just don't get anywhere near. Command reroll, still failing.
That's the universe correcting you having these Evocators in your list, I think.
Yeah, it probably is. It's one of the reasons I went from 10 to 5. It's the point of having 10 of them, is they're just going to get charged by Mangler Squigs and annihilated. That's becoming a bit of a running joke. But I'm hoping that, I know usually it's kind of a bit of a curse that once a model gets painted, it dies straight away. I'm hoping my Evocators reverse that, and that now that they've got some paint on them, they will make their charges, and revenge shall be had! That's the plan.
It always reminds me of my brother. Remember my brother's Chaos Space Marines?
Yes.
Yeah. He must have gone for about 3 or 4 turns of Overwatch trying to get those things into combat, and he just never got there.
His blind, deranged Chaos Lord.
Used to get those models. That was 7th edition.
It was, yeah.
That was when Overwatch was first introduced. Well, yeah. Was
I'm sure Lee lost his entire army to Overwatch.
Well, not that long ago, the same happened with me with my Tyranids.
Yeah. Oh, you were going against a Tau Sept gun line, though, to be fair. Yeah,
they were castled up, as I believe the term is.
Yeah, Lee'd be against, like, a unit of Grots and lose them all.
Yeah.
Right, Jay, just enough time for your top choice.
So, my top choice. So, this is not when my dice have failed me, but when dice have just annoyed me. And it's mainly when I'm playing a game against Dave, because he has an uncanny ability every single time he rolls a dice to hit my models.
Yes.
And I even point out to him, roll the dice over there, Dave, where there's 2 foot of, like, empty space, and they'll bounce and hit my models again.
Yeah, I don't mean to. I honestly don't mean to.
No, I
tried to roll them away,
I
but one, usually, I think I must have hit a goblin at...
Yeah, you do.
A goblin
it's,
a turn.
It's mental. It's like you're playing bowls or something against my army. And I won't mind, right, but the models you hit are the ones I've painted.
I do apologise. That does make me feel really bad. I don't mean to. But yeah, okay.
It's true that wherever you roll them on the table, a dice will find its way to a goblin.
It will. It'll hit my models, and then I'll be like, oh, God. And then I'll look, and it's a 6. And annoys me even more.
No, yeah, these Warhammer TV dice as well.
Oh, these Warhammer TV. Well, I did a very scientific experiment the other day, because I was certain Dave was rolling more 6s than I've rolled an entire year. But we tied it up, and actually, you weren't that far ahead.
Let's be honest here. To begin with, it was very one sided. Oh, yeah. At the beginning of the game, I was rolling a lot of 6s, and Jay was rolling nothing. And then in the last 2 turns, you suddenly started rolling.
I wonder as well. In the last 2 turns, you hardly had any. You weren't making as many dice rolls. I wonder.
Yeah.
I think we need to do.
Well, you double turned me, didn't you? I had the first turn in the first battle round, and then you went and double turned me.
I did.
And that's when the game completely...
That was quite devastating for you.
It was, yeah.
What I'm hearing is that we need some kind of video doing a scientific study on Dave's dice rolling skills.
Yeah. That's it, yeah.
With and without Death Watch dice.
But, yeah.
He just, like, ricochets them off my models and lands them on a 6. It's a skill. What's that film, Wanted, where he can bend the bullets? You do that with the dice.
That's going to really subconsciously annoy me now, because I feel well, really
it's got, you're still going to hit them though,
it's
Dave.
Got to the point where I'm thinking I need to model, like, protective barriers around my units.
It's like in bowling, your little bumper around the base.
Sorry, Jay.
I'll give you, like, foam dice to roll.
Okay, I feel embarrassed. We'll wrap up the top 3 at that point, I think. Any honourable mentions?
Not so much dice betraying, but every disgustingly resilient roll I seem to save.
I mean, you do have a knack for it. And I was thinking, it's those green dice, but it doesn't seem to matter. Any other time you roll dice, you get average results. It's just when you pick them up to all disgusting and resilient, they just always seem to turn up five and six.
Blessings of Nurgle, clearly.
Yeah, clearly. Clearly. Right, we shall wrap up our top three. We got one more segment left, and that's our community picks, and that's coming up next. Right, so we just have enough time left on this podcast. I say time. I always say time. It's like we've got some kind of time limit.
Yeah.
We don't. Do you notice our last podcast, Jay, was just shy over an hour? It was the shortest podcast for ages.
There you go.
It's Matt. You can't shut him up.
Two-thirds of our podcast.
Just talks. Yeah, yeah, that's true. It's Matt. He just talks loads.
Yeah.
Always brings a ton of news of him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Right, Matt, you have your data slate.
I do have the data slate, and we've got quite a few top threes this week. So, Pandora's Bits Box can only think of one specific instance. They rapid-fired twin-linked plasma guns on two obliterators. Only one was wounded, so it re-rolled all their misses. Three wounds, two plus saves, nine ones on the 10 dice by obliterators.
Nine ones.
It's a lot of ones, so yeah. Twin-linked plasma obliterators blowing themselves up.
And he's not played Warhammer since.
No. Stormcred Games... First game played with shiny new Warhammer TV dice, nothing but ones.
He's got a duff batch there, then I reckon. Yeah, take them back.
Interestingly, Scarlet Kingdom, she says, number one, Warhammer TV dice charge rolls. Number two, Warhammer TV dice charge rolls. Number three, Warhammer TV dice charge rolls. Maybe we've just got a lucky batch of these Warhammer TV dice.
Not when I'm rolling for evocators, I'm not.
No. Brian Glasspool. Was playing Blood Bowl at the weekend against Adam Troke. First turn, first action to pick up the ball, turnover. Dice didn't improve. It wasn't until turn four where they didn't cause a turnover from their first dice roll.
And it's brutal in Blood Bowl as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's very unlucky.
You have to plan for getting a turnover, don't you?
You do. Blood Bowl. If you're getting a turnover as soon as you pick up the dice.
Yeah, not like you can do that.
Yeah. Oh, boy, Phil.
Yay.
Says, that time their abomination failed to charge twice in a row. Yeah, sorry about that, Phil. In a similar note, this is like the greatest hits of Warhammer TV here. Vincent Notley says, when one death threat fired, and then a second death threat fired, and then a third, and a fourth, and a fifth. This isn't how the world is supposed to work, where he managed to launch every single death threat against me in like turn two or something stupid like that.
That was awesome.
It was awesome.
That was awesome.
Primarch Draken, 7th edition plasma cannon rules. First shot killed one of my own squads because of the scatter. Second shot killed the user's squad and a couple of other guys. And the third shot finished off the rest of the squad.
Don't play with plasma.
Stop firing.
Take melter guns instead.
Grant Gibson says, check out the Glacial Geek bat rep. Really good YouTube channel, Glacial Geek, lots of videos. Needing 9 or less on 3d6. So a Knight Valiant can fall back from combat. With Scarbrand, Phil rolls 3 sixes. Oh. It's the dice. When you need to roll low, you'll roll high. Yeah. You need to roll high, you roll low. If that's not the universe trolling you, then I don't know what is. And then Santi Agul says, is it just Games Workshop games? Not necessarily. Rolled for a full salvo with fully overloaded photon torpedoes. Only 6s miss. Rolled 6 sixes. Took a shot to the chest in battle tech. 1 in 36 chance of a possible crit. 1 in 36 chance of damaged, completely destroyed. I think Lee's had something similar in
We played Battletech, when was it? Summer last year it was, and we were playing right into the late hours, early hours in the morning. And we were playing with one guy who'd never played before. We give him a mech, and he didn't do anything the whole game. And then last shot of the game, I think he needs to roll like 4 sixes in a row.
Something like this, wasn't he? The odds of doing it.
And he ended up like getting a shot, blowing the thing's head off, critting the guy pilot inside. It was amazing.
And then their last shout out, a full squad of Scourges died by landing in cover. Yeah, that one was brutal. Back in the day.
Your drop pod.
So then we have got a bit of a special shout out from a certain Ben Bailey. Now, if you don't know, Ben Bailey's a bit well-known around Games Workshop for rolling
recently,
nothing but ones.
Recently became officially part of the Warhammer community.
He is.
Warhammer community.
He's a Warhammer community. He previously was involved in Specialist Games, doing a lot of the graphic design and pretty pictures and stuff in the Lord of the Rings books. He's often on the Twitch stream, and yet I think he's officially with Warhammer Community now. So he decided to share the greatest hits of terrible dice rolls from Ben Bailey. So number three, the final game of the Middle-Earth GT, playing a wonderful game against Ed Ball. He lost the priority roll 5 out of 6 times, as well as losing 4 to 6 heroic 50-50s.
Oh, that is harsh, that is.
It is fairly harsh. Number two, on the Warhammer TV live stream, he was trying out Abaddon, you know, showing off the new model, how awesome it is. For the only 2 turns he was in combat, he rolled a 1 for his extra attacks, meaning he took mortal wounds.
Yeah, on his sword.
And number one, in the doubles, he was playing against Kerry and Nick Baton, I guess. Him and Jack needed a 3+ on any of their dice so they could stand a chance to command point reroll to win the game. Ben rolled 2 1s.
Oh man, that's harsh.
So yeah, he is notorious for rolling ones, as is his Twitter handle, the one Ben Bailey.
The one Ben Bailey. Nice. There's some really good picks there. It just reminded me as well, you played a guy, when you mentioned about the Scourges dying when they came into cover, Deep Dragon into cover, the guy you played against at, was it the Throne of Skulls?
Yeah, with his Vanguard.
Who charged into your Sylvan F. Wildwoods. And
yeah, I told him not to. I said if you roll a 1, they're dead, they just die. And he didn't even need to do it. He could have just moved them and claimed the objective, but I mean, the whole point of Warhammer is getting into combat and fighting. Yeah, we lost 2 out of 3. 2 1s out of 3.
There you go.
But I didn't even feel bad, you know, because I said to him,
just don't do it.
I did feel bad.
The moral of the story is never to tempt the fates. No. If you say anything but a 1, you will be rolling 1s.
Yeah, definitely. Right, so for next week's top 3, just to confirm, we are doing our top 3 sprues.
It's because it's 2 years of sprues and brews, I think we'll have an anniversary top 3. So we want to know your top 3 sprues and your top 3 brews.
Cool. Should be quite an interesting one.
Yeah, it should be a fun one.
It's always interesting when we ask people, when you guys ask people.
And it changes very often as well. So it's not one that's, you know, permanently going to be, these are my picks.
Yeah.
Cool. Thanks again for listening to the podcast and checking out sprewsandbrews.com. If you do have any feedback or if you'd like to get in touch, please do so either on Twitter at sprewsandbrews, facebook.com/sprewsandbrews, or leave us a comment on the website, whichever way works best for you. We'll be back again recording next Wednesday, as long as none of us are ill or anything happens. Touch wood.
Sounds ominous. We should be back.
Do you know something, Dave?
We will be back with a Fire Slayers review as well. Hopefully we get it Saturday so we can slot up in a bit. Worst case, if we get it on Tuesday, I'll just have a normal nighter and read the book, and we'll have a review on Wednesday.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, like I say, hopefully you can get a game with him.
Yeah,
as well, before the podcast.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, because it looks like there's been some. It looks like it plays a bit differently now.
I think every war scroll has changed.
Yeah,
which is good because they are in all range, aren't they?
Extra wounds
are across the board, but yeah, we're getting ahead of ourselves. We'll have a full lowdown on the Fire Slayers this time next week.
So until then, we'll say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.